This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kanison and Noel Lim. It is 6:01 in the morning, Tuesday, the 9th of February. And Noel, you're looking very festive today. How are you feeling?
Yes, I'm feeling good. I'm in a cheongsam. decided to be in the mood for Chinese New Year.
A couple of days early, but then you know what? What's to say that the festive spirit needs to start this weekend? Roshan, how about you? How are you feeling today?
Well, I'm wearing red in order to kind of channel my... I was trying to come up with something smart, but it seems I have failed. It is too early in the morning to pretend to be smart this morning.
You're always in red, right? Or every other day you're in red?
It feels like,
you
know,
it's your lucky color.
I felt FOMO from all the festive talks. So I was trying to see whether I could shoehorn what I was wearing into the theme of the day, it seems. But again, like I said, too early in the morning to try to be smart, I guess.
But not too early in the morning to have very interesting conversations, right?
Oh, for sure. Never too early for that, Lynn. And, you know, in about 10, 15 minutes, we're going to talk about the Greta Thunberg effect. A very interesting thing. I mean, she's become a household name over the last 1-2 years, maybe more in the Western world, but definitely more of a familiar name to some on this side. And essentially, I guess the question here is, what kind of material influence do big celebrities or public personas like this have on us, right? Do they help us change our habits? That's something we're going to talk about in about 10 minutes.
Yes, and 6:30, we're going to cover international news. So something from China and, of course, Myanmar. A lot of things are happening there. And, of course, we should not miss out the US.
And if you want to weigh in on any of these conversations, you can. Remember, you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, though, we're going to be talking about Clubhouse, which is an invite-only chat app used by Elon Musk. So stay tuned for that in just a few minutes. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was new by No Doubt, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roshan and Noel. So this morning, we are taking a look at Clubhouse, which The Guardian describes as part talkback radio, part conference call, part the app house party. And if you don't know what it is a social networking app that's based on audio chats. So users can listen in on conversations that are being held. They can also discussions between interesting people on particular topics. And it exploded onto the scene recently because Elon Musk hosted an audio chat on Clubhouse with Robinhood CEO Vlad Tenev. So that gained a lot of attention on the app. And now it appears that everyone wants to be jumping on this bandwagon. But it's very exclusive, I hear.
I mean, first and foremost, what a genius move by whoever convinced Elon Musk to have that chat on the platform, because they busted past that 5,000 person a room limit, and people started streaming it live on YouTube. And that's why it's blown up, right? The company was $100 million 1 year ago, now worth $1 billion based on its last funding round, and has been the top of the App Store chart in many countries around the world. And here's the thing, it's exclusive. You have to be invited into the app. And I was very kindly invited by someone a few days ago. I just joined it, and it's very, very interesting. I only have 2 invites to give out. So now I'm also thinking, this is a very precarious situation.
I'm just saying, there are 2 other people on air with you this morning.
I have to think about this.
Yes, but I don't have an iPhone. This is only for iPhone users, right?
So imagine, at this current juncture, it's only open to iPhone users, which is maybe a third to a half of the smartphone population. Imagine once it opens up. I it's very, very interesting, right? Now, a few questions here. Is this a pandemic fad? That's number one. 2, will Facebook and Twitter kill it by Instagramming it, right? Essentially, will they just do what Instagram did to Snapchat by adopting it? And Twitter has a similar feature called Spaces. But the caliber of celebrities or public personas that you have here will drive this forward, right? And we don't have, in the social media space, that transformative social media platform for audio just yet. We've had it for written with tweets. We had photographs with Instagram, and we had Snapchat with the whole disappearing photo thing, which essentially became stories on Instagram, which was a massive boost to Instagram. So could this be the audio social media platform we've all been waiting for?
Yeah, it seems in my little world that this is taking the world by storm, or rather maybe it's just the Bangsa bubble by storm. The rest of us are, you know, too busy working. networking. So this is like a drop-in audio networking. It's like as though you're walking down the street and you're just dropping into all your neighbors' homes, listening into their conversation. It has a bit of a voyeuristic kind of feel to it, right? But I can see that, you know, people are really excited about this. And to be honest, I feel a bit left out, not having an iPhone. I think I would definitely jump on it, you know, if I was given an invite. It sounds very interesting. But I'm not sure if I would stay on long on the platform. Mm. Like, it feels like, you know, there's just so many things going on in my life, in the real world, that I don't think I might have that time. But I can see where the you know, that sense of exclusivity, you know, it will be very attractive to many people.
I guess it would depend for me on what kind of conversations are being had on the app, right? And full disclosure, you know, I don't have Clubhouse. I probably will not get it just because I have enough apps in my life and don't need another. But I've heard it described as basically a podcast you can join, right? So if you already have that audio listening habit, then Clubhouse will build upon it and kind of introduce that community element when podcasts are usually a much more solitary experience.
And podcasts are also generally recorded, right? They're produced and they come later.
So it's the limited time only factor.
Yeah, there's that. Here, it's a live, it's essentially the modern version of live broadcasting. It's two conversations. It's people having conversations and you're listening in, which is broadcast radio, right? Mm-hmm. And now, like, I've just opened up the calendar on the app here and it's upcoming for me because I've put it in my selections. Oh, I like tech. I like current affairs. I like entrepreneurship. And it's giving me a bunch of scheduled events. So like 5:45, there's Women Entrepreneurs Unite. It's time to monetize your vision. 5:50 a.m., the chefs and food creators. I mean, a lot of things going on here. I'm definite. Mindset, motivation, and marketing is happening at 6 a.m. All things that I can't listen to right now because I'm working. But it is very interesting to see how this evolves, right? Will it have enough to capture a critical level of audience that helps it grow and become a mainstay on your phone, or will it fade away? That is the key question.
Yeah, I think in December they had about 600,000 weekly active users. Now they have 2 million active users. But China has banned it because China bans all US apps, I guess. So there you go. But you know, when I just look at the numbers, right, in May 2020, I think it was around the early time when they started in March. In May, they had 1,500 users and they were already worth $100 million. And I think to myself, what am I doing in my life? It's like, you know, you only have 1,500 users and you are worth $100 million.
Yeah, it's pretty exponential growth. 130, I think it's 1,000 over times to go from 1,500 users to 2 million a year, or just under a year later. But I guess the question for me is also, if it does continue to catch on, assuming that this doesn't fade into obscurity like some of the apps that we've seen over the past 5 years or so, is it then going to get acquired by some of the big
Facebook
tech companies? Yeah, Facebook, you know, because we saw that happen with Snapchat, we saw that, and Instagram and WhatsApp as well. So is this going to happen to Clubhouse further down the line?
Yeah, no, I still can't believe Snapchat turned down that Facebook offer. You know, they, before Facebook turned Instagram, unleashed Instagram onto Snapchat, Evan Spiegel turned down $1 billion, or was it $3 billion at the time? And I mean, to be fair, Snapchat isn't as big as it could have been, but it's still a sizable, profitable business today and has a following. So Clubhouse doesn't have to be as big as Instagram, but whether it can latch on to an audience that will keep it going, because right now they still haven't figured out monetization for this. And one of the things that's being bandied about is subscriptions, which could deter some people. But it could appeal to those who are more privacy conscious, or it appeals to that level of, I guess, exclusivity and things like that. But a long way to go before this app actually matures, right? Facebook, Twitter, all of these different platforms started off in one way, ended up in a different way, and continue to change and evolve.
Well, Clubhouse is being described as the new tech unicorn. So let us know whether you would join it if you could. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We have some messages coming up, and then we're taking a look at public personas which might influence our lives. So stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Don't You Know by Durand Jones and The Indications, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kanesan, and Noel Lim. So, Have you heard of the Greta Thunberg effect? It's an interesting new concept being put forward. So we're looking at this article in The Conversation. But it's based on a study that was done on over 1,000 Americans. And it studied the correlation between familiarity with Greta Thunberg and her fight for climate change and the willingness of the individual to take action themselves, whether it be by contacting election officials or giving time and money to campaigns. And it talks about this, how familiarity might with these public figures who are undergoing this very public struggle might breed a form of empowerment. It's an interesting concept. And I guess it also raises the question of whether or not other public personas also do influence our thoughts and our personal lives.
Yes, one cannot underestimate the effect of just like ordinary people, the impact of ordinary people if they just take a stance, right? I think history has shown not just Greta, I think even before her, way before her was mm-hmm. Rosa Parks, who refused to give up her seat for a white man in a bus. Just a very ordinary act of defiance had, you know, sparked a lot of interest and naturally a lot of sympathy for her and for the black movement. And also Mahatma Gandhi, mm-hmm. you know, seemed like a simple man, but highly educated. And he also received a lot of, that kind of support, right? People suddenly felt, okay, there was someone who can speak for them, right? Because otherwise they feared speaking up. And yeah, so I think even for me, if you talk about on a personal level, who has really maybe impacted me a lot, I think would be Anita Roddick, the late Dame Anita Roddick, the founder of Body Shop. I think she has had a lot of influence on me, like in terms of like how you see businesses, the role of businesses. It's not just about making money, but it's also having a social and environmental impact.
I think that it's such a powerful thing too. Okay, so you've got two different types of public personas, I guess, that can impact you, right? One is the larger than life individual that inspires you, whether it's Michelle Obama or Robert Iger, former CEO of Disney, right? These larger than life figures who came from nothing or seemingly nothing and achieved success in their lives. Well, they can have a little bit of a power distance, right? Because they're, mm-hmm. oh, you know what? That's Michelle Obama. She can do those kind of things. Oh, that's Robert Iger. That's Barack Obama. These are larger than life figures. Greta Thunberg's story is of a regular person who did something within the realm of her ability, which anyone else can do, could possibly do. And it lends itself to relatability. It lends itself to groundedness. And this is probably a more powerful example in our day-to-day lives. The co-workers around us, the family members that do certain things, that inspire you to do action, because if the action seems like it's possible, then you say, oh, you know what? Then I can do it. When I stopped using plastic bags in 2008, it took some time, but then my friends and my family also started doing it because they're, oh, okay, you know what? This is within the realm of our possibility. We can do this. And it doesn't start spreading like a virus. That's a bad analogy to use in this time and age. but it does start to increase the consciousness level about it, because most of the time, people just aren't aware about the different things they can actually do. And they hand it over to, oh, you know what? The governments or the authorities, it's their job to handle this. But a lot of times, we have to take it into our own hands for causes that we care about. And we have started seeing more and more of this over time. So the Greta Thunberg effect, and it's called the Greta Thunberg effect because of how big she became last year, and whether it's a causality, because this is not causation here, right? We're not saying it's a causation. Yes. The study also makes a point to say it's not causation. It's correlation. It is associations. Which came first, we don't know, but there is an increasing awareness around it. And I'm more than happy for it because these are the pressing concerns that we have. And we're seeing that how could that, these kind of things permeate into other things like ESG investing, which is very green-centered and sustainable and about governance. We're seeing that boom as well. How else do these decisions then and behaviors affect the rest of our lives?
I mean, human beings tend to fall prey to inertia, right, in our daily lives. So we have our habits and we like to stick to them. So sometimes things like not using plastics on a day-to-day basis, until someone perhaps in your immediate circle of friends displays that actually it's not it isn't a huge point of friction to eliminate single-use plastics from your life, you may feel that it is a much bigger issue, a much bigger problem than it actually would be. So it is that relatability factor when it comes to people like Greta Thunberg, when it comes to yesterday I had a conversation on the Breakfast Grill with Ben Bland of the Lowy Institute, mm-hmm. and he wrote a book on Indonesian President Joko Widodo. And this was a man who he positioned himself as a man of the people, and he was, because not so long ago he was a furniture maker, his father was a bamboo trader, and he rose through the ranks because he wanted to make his community better.
And that's a perfect example right there. Because Joko Wee would become a relatable example of, oh, you know what, anyone can do this. And yes, there's survivorship bias and all of that, but it shows that it's a relatable example. It's grounded in the reality that most people live, as opposed to the elitism that sometimes mm-hmm. a lot of the examples that we have today are from.
Yes, I think a local example, I would say, is someone like Hannah Yeo. You know, when you look at her, she seems so relatable, right? She went to college, a local college, then I think she went to university, and, you know, she goes to church. You know, she seems like that regular person, like just one of us. And I can see why she, for example, has such a great urban appeal.
So let us know what you think, and whether there are public figures who have influenced your life. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We're about to head into the 6:30 news bulletin now, and to take you there is Michael Jackson with Rock With You, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Australia by The Shins, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kanisan, and Noel Lim. So now we're turning our attention to international stories this morning, and we're not talking about Australia. In fact, we're talking about Italy, where it appears that a particular person has moved one step closer to becoming Italian Prime Minister, and this person is Mario Draghi.
Yeah, so you may have read the news recently that the former Prime Minister had lost support of his Parliament and stepped down, and in the process of finding a new candidate to fill in the PM spot, Mario Draghi has entered the spotlight here. And he has no history in politics, but he is quite well known for being the ECB chair, the European Central Bank chair. And this would see him, the parties, the two formerly anti-Euro parties, signal that they would be willing to support him as leader of government of national unity. This is very interesting, especially for any country that follows a parliamentary system where you need the parliament to have confidence in the prime minister to run the country, right, essentially, in normal circumstances. So this is going to be interesting whether it plays out, because Mario Draghi not made famous, but came to prominence during the European debt crisis when he was at the ECB. So it could be interesting to see how he handles Italy, which is also has its own debt issues.
Yeah, so nicknamed Super Mario. The question is, can he save Italy? So I think, you know, he's been credited with doing a lot of good things at ECB. But at the same time, there were also a lot of critics about his work there. So I think in any political crisis, it's always helpful when someone who seems a bit neutral, or, you know, someone who's a technocrat, a professional, who just do the job that's needed, and, you know, trying to, at the same time, who's a good negotiator and can be a bridge between two sides, that's always very helpful. So hopefully he can bring that kind of stability in the meantime to Italy.
And speaking of stability, right? So if he gets support of a majority of parties, because he's not partisan or political, he could have a much bigger majority in parliament than Giuseppe Conte had, right? Because Conte is partisan, he's political. So you wouldn't be worried about parties backtracking again from the coalition or this national unity government. A very, very interesting proposition. I wonder how we could apply that, something like that here. Is there a leader that would appeal to all sides of the political spectrum to lead the country, irrespective of when?
So you know what this also reminds me of? I don't know whether either of you watched Designated Survivor.
Yes, it does.
Yeah. The fact that it was an interesting thought exercise of what happens if an independent becomes president of the US, right? So anyway, actually
the answer is you need a national catastrophe that eliminates all other opposition to that.
Anyway, the Financial Times actually does have a good article kind of looking at Mario Draghi as a person. So do check that out. It's the Euro's savior called to serve Italy. It's quite interesting because it talks
Super
about
Super Mario's his, back again.
It talks about his childhood and his kind of his career up until this point. So that's something that we're going to be watching. But in some other news as well, China has arrested an Australian citizen who was formerly a news anchor for a Chinese state television. So this could escalate tensions even further between Beijing and Canberra. So the anchor's name, her name is Cheng Lei. She's a Chinese-born Australian, most recently worked for CGTN, and she was formally arrested on the 5th of February following 6 months of detention. This is according to the Australian Foreign Minister, Maurice Payne.
Yeah, so she built her career starting in Australia. I think she used to work for CNBC. Quite an interesting person. In fact, in her early part of her career, she trained as an accountant. Anyway, so I think now the press are, you know, obviously, you know, the for example, the Committee to Protect Journalists are now, you know, they have been calling on authorities in China to disclose the reasons for her detention. And also, you know, like, what is the reason for her detention? And obviously, this is really not great news for her as well as her family.
No, I think back in September, China said that she was suspected of carrying out criminal activities endangering China's national security. And apparently this is one of the most serious allegations ever brought against a foreign journalist.
Yes, and while she has not been allowed counsel, the embassy, Australian embassy, has visited Cheng 6 times since her during her detention, most recently on January 27th. And I think this all just fits into this whole narrative we've seen over the last few months about the rising tensions between China and China and Australia.
Reflexive, isn't it?
Yeah, it's reflexive,
talking
right?
About China
so
and the US.
Beijing and Canberra don't seem to be getting on right now. From all sorts of things like taking responsibility for the COVID-19 pandemic at the beginning, seeing then that apply to trade sanctions between the two. I think among other things, China banned Australia and Bali. All sorts of things have kind of permeated on the geopolitical level, but this is quite a significant one, right? Because China has arrested an Australian citizen claiming that she was spying.
And she may not be the first, she may not be the last. There will be others that may follow suit.
Correct. And this has implications for journalists and all. And this was back and forth because I think even Australian government had raided houses of Chinese journalists. So this is a back and forth that is seeming to escalate from journalism all the way up to the trade sanctions.
So let us know what you think of these stories that we've covered so far this morning. The number to let us know what your thoughts is 0187898899. That's over WhatsApp. Or you could tweet us at BFM Radio. Right now, we're about to head into some messages, and then we're going to be taking a look at our own local papers and portals. So stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Everything You Want by Vertical Horizon, and you're listening to The Morning Run. I dare say everything you wanted to listen to this morning with Lynn Mark, Roshan Gunnison and Noel Lim. And we are looking at our local papers and portals this morning. And of course, the first thing that caught my eye is from the Malay Mail. And it's a piece of information, I think, from yesterday evening, that now ministers only need to undergo 3 days of observation upon return from official overseas duties. So this is the latest exemption to Act 342, which is the Prevention and Control of Infectious Diseases Act. And, it raises a lot of conflicted feelings in me. Because on the one hand, okay, yes, you know, ministers are very important people, they are very important business. But on the other hand, 3 days of quarantine when everyone else has to undergo, I think it is 10 days at this point right now, it doesn't bode well for this whole, like, no kind of double standard pledge that the government has made before.
Yeah, so why don't they just make it official for everyone, right? If 3 days is the maximum that is quite considered to be quite safe, then just make it for everyone. And then what you see that more people will be traveling, and then you can save your aviation industry. But I think 3 days, I think this might be the shortest time frame as far as I know globally. And I just don't know whether it's reasonable at all. I mean, you know, ministers don't work in isolation. They travel with an entourage as far as we know. And sometimes they travel with their spouses. So do the spouses also quarantine for 3 days? and 10 days or 10 days, or does the whole entire party that travel with them also only quarantine for 3 days? And that's it's dangerous, right, for society if they come out and they do go about with their business.
It also brings to mind the question of leadership by example, right? I mean, and we were earlier talking about the Greta Thunberg effect. This will have its own kind of situation, because end of the day, there will be a segment of society that will feel that the elites don't follow the rules or mm-hmm. have different rules and all sorts of things. And then how could this possibly affect morale, compliance to SOPs? Because end of the day, a leader's impact and actions have tremendous power, whether they think so or not. And no matter what, I mean, maybe there is a completely scientific reason for this, right? Oh, you take a test where before you leave, you come back, you take a test, or you test negative. Okay, like within 3 days, you can go. It could be completely rational, but symbolically, there will be a spill-off from this.
At this point, it's no longer even a perception that there are different rules for elites. These are different rules for ministers that have been put in place, an exemption specifically for them. And it's worrying, because ministers are not robots. They're not somehow immune to COVID-19. We haven't been vaccinated yet. So what happens if they come out of quarantine? And then it's not as if they're going home to isolation, right? They're going to be conducting their business. Ministers are very high traffic people. And these are people who will be, we have seen cases of ministers not observing social distancing SOPs in the past. Whether or not this will continue to do so in the future, obviously, is going to be up in the air. But still, it is definitely very worrying. And one wonders whether or not, one wonders how much more we're going to see these kinds of exemptions put in place.
Now, maybe it will be one day quarantine the next.
So something else that's caught the ire of people on the internet includes the fact that it seems that the government, so last year during Budget 2021, it was announced that 150,000 laptops would be provided to students from the 150 million ringgit Chirdik fund. And I think yesterday it came out that these were loaned laptops, right? So essentially, they would have to go back to the government later on. Now, there's nothing wrong with a program like that. It's not something that's unheard of. We had buku pinjaman, a textbook for textbooks when I was in school. This is not an unheard of thing, but I guess it's the presentation of it, right? Because it sounded maybe that they were giving it to the kids. And then again, a whole concern about liability. What happens if the computer is damaged? And just generally, whether it could have been done better, right? Because we are seeing MPs and political organizations like Muda who have raised money to buy laptops, not loan laptops. They've bought laptops for kids who need them. I think they raised, I think Muda raised 400,000 ringgit in December last year to provide laptops for needy families. Because the laptop, especially for a family that doesn't have one, can be such a powerful tool for connectivity, for information, for the ability to do work and study. Whether it was a matter of misrepresentation, or whether MPs on the opposition side just weren't aware, maybe they didn't read the fine print and now just making a fuss about it. I guess the question I have is, can the government do it differently? Because how many times can you reuse these laptops, right? Maybe 3-4 times over the years. But it's, can more be done, I guess, is the big question I'm asking.
Yeah, I think digital is always that big thing for the government, right? And just also brings back, sorry to, you know, bring back this piece of news that Lynn, you spoke about, shortening the quarantine period. How about, you know, just doing things digitally, right? Conducting your meetings over Zoom like the rest of us. Just in Malaysia, we're just talking about COVID-19 cases, right? So we have 3,100 cases yesterday. At least it's down from Sunday's 3,700 cases. But the number of people who passed away, it's a record high, I think, for a daily number. I think we saw 24 cases. And so they were mainly locals, except there were 3 foreigners. And 5 patients, 5 out of these 24, have no underlying medical conditions. So I think it's just, you know, we just all have to be really careful and in observing as well, in observing the SOPs.
Absolutely. And the Star's front page is also COVID-related. They're talking about where the clusters really are. So about the fact that workplaces and detention centres right now are the source of more than a third of all COVID-19 cases over the past 2 months. And I think there have been nearly 160,000 COVID-19 cases reported over a 60-day period up until February 4th of this year. So it just goes to, it just underscores the importance of addressing things like worker housing and as well as cramped conditions in detention centers if we want to resolve this COVID-19 situation. Right now, we're about to head into the 7 o'clock news bulletin, and then after that, we're going to be bringing you more business news and analysis. So first, some music. Barbara Ann by The Beach Boys, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.